Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good day and welcome to Orange County Talk Radio. I'm John Marino. We are produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities right through the spring of 2021. Here on What's Happening in the Lower Hudson Valley, we talk today with Michelle Hook. Michelle Hook is Vice President of Public Affairs for Dance Camera Energy, the parent company of Newburgh's Dance Camera Generating Station along the Hudson River. Here on Orange County Talk Radio, What's Happening in the Lower Hudson Valley. Michelle Hook, first of all, welcome to Orange County Talk Radio. And secondly, Dance Camera has been a company that's been around for about 60 years now, since the 1950s. Walk us through the history of the company, if you would.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me, John. So we've been there since 1951. It's been about 70 years that we've been there on the shores of the Hudson. We initially started as a coal plant, and we went back and forth between coal and oil for a number of years between the 70s and 2014. We are now a natural gas facility, and we're what they call a peaker facility. And we run on just the hottest of hot and the coldest of cold days of the year. But the state relies on us on those days when people are cranking their AC or cranking their heat at home to give that extra power that people need.
Mm-hmm. I know this is a pretty technical question, but you talked about how Dance Camera began in 1951 as a coal-based company. Look where you are today. How did this generation happen through the decades? It doesn't happen by osmosis.
No. Coal was phased out, mostly because of cost. And then we became an oil facility. During the oil crisis in the 1970s, we transitioned to natural gas. We went back to coal for a while in the 80s, and then went back to natural gas again when it was deemed the cleanest option available. And we've been natural gas ever since.
Mm-hmm. I remember all of this because back in the late 70s, I began my career in, of all places, Orange County at that time. So it's happened fast and quickly, and look where Dance Camera is today. And right now, you are involved with a proposal to help fill the void to be created in April when the Indian Point Energy Center in Buchanan in Westchester County will be no more. Tell us about this proposal.
Sure. So the project is to simply upgrade the facility that we have there now. What we have there now is extremely old, inefficient, and pretty dirty. There's no energy reliability gap when Indian Point closes down. But that said, the plants that would provide your power, the Roaston plant, which sits right next to us on the shores of the Hudson, the Dance Camera plant, and then the Bowline plant, which is right across the line in Rockland County, are all extremely old, in excess of 40, 45, 50 years, and in our case, in excess of 70 years. And so they're not clean. And if they're the ones that would be making up the difference when the zero emitting Indian Point nuclear facility finishes its decommissioning in April, the air will get a lot dirtier. 20% increase in reliance on fossil fuel when Indian Point goes down is the number. So what we want to do is clean up the existing facility that we have, be the main source of power for the Lower Hudson Valley until we get enough wind and solar to meet the state's climate goals. And it will clean up the air significantly for that region.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's say there's somebody along the way up and down the Hudson Valley, maybe somebody who lives, a group in the area there by the current Indian Point facility, and they say, well, Indian Point's going to shut down in April. Why would we allow Dance Camera then? Okay, we understand they want to clean the place up, but we thought nothing would be there anymore and we want to keep it that way.
We're running now. I think that's the thing that people need to realize. We're running the Roaston plant that sits next door to us. We're already running. And if Roaston runs for just 5 days, it will put out more pollution than the new Dance Camera facility would for an entire year if it ran 365, 24/7. So it's in the best interest of the community, not just from a health perspective, but from an environmental and climate change perspective, and also from a cost perspective. Not only is this going to give a much needed shot in the arm to the region for economic development with jobs, will be increasing the tax base for the region. But it also lowers energy bills significantly. It's actually just for the Hudson Valley about an $11 million a year reduction in energy costs because think of a car and the gas mileage you get. The newer, the more efficient the vehicle, the better gas mileage you get, the less often you have to fill up at the pump, more money in your pocket. Think of us the same way as a gas plant. We get really good gas mileage, much more efficient new facility. And so if we require less natural gas to operate, that cost savings is passed on to the customer.
Mm-hmm. Now, opponents of the project claim emissions all across the region, the tri-state region, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, emissions will increase. You say that's not going to be a problem. How do we meet those complaints in the middle?
So I think the first thing you need to do is divide the different types of emissions. There's carbon dioxide, which we all breathe out. So it's not toxic to anyone. If I go from having 5 people to 15 people in my house for a gathering, the carbon dioxide number is going to go up significantly. It is a greenhouse gas, but it is not toxic to humans. It is not a health issue. We will be increasing carbon dioxide hyperlocally at our site because our facility will be running more. So of course the carbon dioxide will go up. But regionally, if you look at what will not be running because we would be coming online, carbon dioxide goes down. So it's a net gain for the globe because carbon dioxide doesn't stay stagnant in one place. It doesn't stop at the border of New York. It's still an improvement regionally. Now, when you talk about nitrogen oxide, sulfur dioxide, those are not, NOx is not a greenhouse gas, but it does cause health issues like respiratory illness, asthma, and we will be reducing that significantly, not just locally, but also regionally. So it's a net gain for everyone across the region. I think what happens oftentimes is some of the opposition groups to the project will say, emissions is going up 400% at the site. Well, yes, but that's carbon dioxide that's going up hyperlocally at the site, and that's not a health problem for anyone. Regionally, that number's going down so significantly, it would be the equivalent of taking 50,000 cars off the road every year. That's how significant our CO2 reductions would be for the region.
Mm-hmm. I like that term you use, hyperlocally, because this is what it is all about, this region here, all throughout the Hudson Valley and beyond, like we say, stretching across to nearby New Jersey and Connecticut. Now, some say Dance Camera and your proposed project are not needed for energy reliability. We don't need to be moving in this direction, that they have other ideas and alternatives. How would you answer that?
So we are not needed for reliability. Your lights are not going to go off if we do not build this facility. I want to be very clear about that. And we've never said that that's the case. But what is the case is that the existing Dance Camera facility that's been there since 1951, the Roaston facility and the Bowline facility in Rockland County are all necessary and they will run more. So it's a choice for the local community. You can either run what's there and have much dirtier air, or we can put something that's upgraded and much more efficient there and it will clean up your air and lower your energy bills. But either way, your lights are not going to go off. I also know a lot of the environmental groups will tell you that, you know, battery storage is the answer. There was a recent report put out about an alternative for our site. There are a number of issues with batteries. Batteries store power. They don't generate power. So think of your phone, right? You love the battery in your phone. It works great. Right. But what's the first thing you run for when that battery dies? Power generation, right? A plug.
Right.
So when batteries die, and they only last about 4 to 6 hours these days, they're going to need a source of generation. And if there's not enough wind and solar to power those batteries, you're powering them with fossil generation anyway. So it really makes more sense to put our facility there for the next 15, 20 years until we can get our wind and solar built up to the point where it can take over.
I never thought of battery usage that way. I think, here's my cell phone, stick the plug in, stick it in the wall, and it's going to work. We have power generated, and you put it in the proper perspective here. Now, you have watchdog groups like Scenic Hudson and others. You talked about the watchdog groups. You alluded to them. They say, like you said, using batteries on this project is something that you should do, and you shouldn't be doing anything more. How do you answer those concerns from a Scenic Hudson and groups like that, and you talked to some extent about that already, but give us a little more on that if you would. I know it's a bit more extensive.
Sure. So without getting too in
technical,
the weeds here on energy, the state's grid operator, the New York ISO, Independent System Operator, runs our energy grid for the state of New York. And their main goal is reliability, making sure that they keep your lights on and that we have all the resources we need throughout the state to keep your lights on. They've done extensive studies on what it's going to take to meet the goals of the climate legislation that was just passed. And what they found is that even with all of the wind and solar build out, those don't work 100% of the time. You're relying on Mother Nature and the sun and the wind. And when they're not there, you need something that's called on-call power, something that can step in a moment's notice and fill that gap. Right now, what we have is fossil generation. We need something that we can have that's on call, that we can dispatch in a moment's notice, whether that be renewable natural gas in the future or hydrogen in the future, all of which, by the way, our site would be able to transition to in the future. So beyond batteries, we need quite a bit of dispatchable on-call power to back up our grid when the wind and solar aren't working. Just look at what happened in Texas here recently. I think that's a really good indicator of the fact that you need a really diverse portfolio so that something can step in when something else isn't working at the time.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you invest in IRAs and CDs, sometimes one or two work the way you love and even better sometimes, and sometimes they go down. And you need a diverse portfolio, as most money managers will tell you. Same idea, same concept?
Absolutely. Diversify, right? And our state grid operator is screaming the same thing from the rooftops. I just hoping people take notice.
Like my father first taught me years ago when I was a young man about investing. He just showed me some statistics and said, diversify. Don't leave it all in one spot or you'll be coming to me for help one day. So, I'm not going to help you. So
you hit the nail on the head. That's just right.
Same idea with the energy and the way it needs to be around the region. We'll talk a little more about other sources, obviously. But how can a facility that you have there over at Indian Point, what you want to build up from where it is right now and in the region there, how can all this that runs on gas be reconciled with New York State's current positions on things like climate issues and specifically climate change?
So the legislation that was passed after we were already in the midst of this project application process. We have figured out a way to transition and evolve, right? I mean, our entire energy grid is evolving. And so we've had to learn how to evolve with that. What was initially going to be just a natural gas project, we have now figured out that our new turbines that are state of the art would be able to run on hydrogen or RNG in the future. Now, hydrogen has zero carbon emissions and has no methane because you're not using natural gas. It does have a small amount of nitrogen oxide, which is not a greenhouse gas, but it's so minuscule that it's not really a health issue. So we would be able to transition once the grid was at a point where it could supply enough green energy through wind and solar to make hydrogen, and we could run on clean hydrogen at the site instead of natural gas. So when people say, how do you reconcile this? Well, keep in mind that the goals are 2040, right? That's what the targets for the CLCPA legislation were, 2040. That's still almost 20 years away. We have a long time to figure out, and I think that's why legislators, I don't want to speak for them, but that's why they pushed it out as far as they did, was that they needed time to make this transition. We can be a part of the transition for phase one immediately because we're cleaner than what's there already. And then phase two, we can start incorporating small amounts of hydrogen into the natural gas mix, which would lower our emissions even further, and then eventually be 100% hydrogen, where we would be zero emissions when it comes to carbon and any methane.
Mm-hmm. So this is a long-term plan, basically. As you say, we can't transition from the way we do things now to the way some people want to have things done overnight. This is a decades-long project, procedure, proposal.
That's absolutely accurate. The Climate Action Council for the state, which has been tasked with figuring out how we tackle this legislation, has yet to put forth a roadmap. So it's not going to happen overnight. You know, we're trying to figure it out. The state's still trying to figure it out, even though it's been more than a year since that legislation was passed. So I think everybody needs to keep in mind that it's a moving target, and we're all doing our best to try to evolve and make sure that we can meet the state's climate goals and stop climate change.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Hook, Vice President of Public Affairs, Dance Camera Energy, Orange County Talk Radio here. And this is what's happening in the lower Hudson Valley. Dance Camera Energy has the energy generating station along the Hudson River in Newburgh. Obviously, this project, as you talked about earlier, you alluded to this, that it will provide a massive economic impact, not only for right where Indian Point is in that local region there in the Buchanan area in northwestern Westchester, but hyper-locally, like you say, throughout the entire Hudson Valley region and the tri-state area too. I remember the old GM plant, the car production plant along the Hudson in what was then North Tarrytown, now Sleepy Hollow, back in the 80s and early 90s, et cetera, in the 70s too. And I, one day when I worked at the old WFAS in White Plains, stopped by the plant and talked to people about working at the plant, and I was impressed by how far people came to work there. People from South Jersey, people from northeastern Connecticut and the Hartford area would commute 80, 85, 90 miles per day to go to work in Sleepy Hollow at the GM plant. And I get the impression that what will happen at Indian Point if Dance Camera is able to proceed accordingly will be like this, that people will come from not only near but far because of the economic opportunities presented by Dance Camera.
So when we're building Dance Camera, it's about a 2.5 to 3 year building project. It's a construction project. And we will need about 450 to 500 plus union workers to do that job. We've already signed a memorandum of understanding with the Hudson Valley Building Trades to use as much local labor as we can. So these are jobs that are directly in the local community. Orange County, Newburgh, where the plant sits and where the new plant will be. Of course, as they need more skilled workers, they may have to go outside the area just a little bit. But I do want to stress that our goal was to do a shot in the arm of economic benefit for local workers. You know, and there are those that say that the construction jobs are just temporary. Well, tell that to a union guy and it's pretty insulting. That's sort of the nature of their work. All construction is temporary and then they move to the next job. And this is a 2.5 to 3 year consistent, high paying, highly skilled job for these guys right there. They don't have to travel. They don't have to sleep in hotels. It's close to home. So there are a lot of benefits for them, not to mention the restaurants that they will frequent, the vendors that we will use to provide the supplies needed for the construction, all of that, and the jobs themselves that will be created by the plant. About 35 high-paying jobs for people who will work at the facility to run it on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't understand that job creation, the way it trickles down, the way you described it, that it's not about one job. It's about, for example, the natural gas pipeline, the XL pipeline, all the controversy about that, how many jobs it will take away. It's not just the 10 or 11,000 up front. We've seen estimates that say 50, 60, 70,000 jobs overall in these areas, the pipeline areas, will be affected because of all the other ancillary work and businesses that will be lost along the way, like you point out about restaurants, shops frequented, et cetera. It's really like a chain link fence and it trickles down from top to bottom and all the way across from left to right and right to left.
Every vendor, every contractor, all of them will be impacted and are already being impacted by COVID and the slowing of the economy here in recent months. I think this is going to be a much needed economic benefit for the region, some growth that that's been long coming.
Mm-hmm. You talk about construction workers too, and don't tell them it's a temporary job. We can equate, I guess, construction work in a way like acting work, where you know you'll be on a show for a finite amount of time at least, and you don't know if that show will get a reboot or an extension. And if not, you are looking for your next opportunity. Construction works the same way. You know that you go into a project, you'll have a certain amount of time there at least, and that may extend. And if not, then you, before that job comes to an end, you're already looking around for your next opportunity. And I think we should look at it that way too.
That's right. They usually try to line up two or three of these in a row. They put, this one gives them 2 or 3 years, and then they'll have another one lined up that is estimated to start shortly after that. They may have a month or two lapse and they're in between, but with the high-paying, highly skilled positions, a month or two gap there isn't really a big deal for these guys, and then they can hop to the next one.
Mm-hmm. And then if needed, you would then go extend outside of the Hudson Valley region to places like New Jersey, Connecticut, et cetera, in order to fill that roster to make sure that enough workers are available and on site at all times, if needed.
That's right. That's right. You know, we start local first and then go outside as needed for skills or manpower that might not be available locally.
Right. Hyper-local, obviously, and then regional, too, if need be.
That's right.
Now, also, too, in the areas that will be impacted by what Dance Camera wants to do, You're generating local support, and the more people find out about this plan, the more support seems to be coming in.
It seems to be that way. As long as we can dispel some of the misinformation that's out there, anyone who is willing to listen to the facts and sit down and talk to us seems to really understand the benefit that this brings economically and health-wise and climate-wise. It's the people who listen to the rhetoric out there, very much alarmism out there about the sky is falling if this plant were to come. It's significantly cleaner than what you're already getting that's been there since 1950, 1960. So it's certainly not going to be worse than what you're already experiencing. I try to equate it to a hybrid vehicle, right? New York City has been transitioning its cab fleet from gas cabs to hybrid cabs. Now, they're not electric. Of course, there's still emissions associated with hybrid cabs, but it certainly reduces the emissions while they wait for there to be inexpensive, available electric fleets available for them. So do you not make the hybrid step? Do you continue to just use the gas with high pollution in the city that creates smog while you wait for the electric? Of course not. That would be crazy. You make the slow transition to the hybrid, and then you move on to the electric when they're available and it's cost effective. So we're sort of that hybrid, right? We're not saying we're the be-all, end-all. Yes, there are still emissions associated with our facility, but we're taking you from the full, old, inefficient, dirty gas to that middle of the road as we start to look for ways and technologies in the future to be 100% clean.
Do plans and proposals like this sometimes get misunderstood by the public? You talked about the rhetoric, and that's why there's always going to be opposition to everything. I think we can agree on that. But sometimes that opposition may get skewed. Does that skewing occur when people don't understand what exactly is going on, when they don't understand what the benefits to them are? And then when they start to see those benefits and hear about those benefits, then the mindset kind of changes.
I certainly hope it would change. Yes, it's very much skewed. And I think in general, people are always afraid of an unknown, right? And energy itself is a complex issue. It's not an easy one to explain. So when someone comes in and says, do you want clean air? Do you want clean water? And people are like, of course I do. Well, then Say no to Dan Scammer. It's not really that simple. There's a lot more technical items that go into it than that. So I think people need to keep an open mind. We have a lot of information available on our website. There's actually several public hearings coming up on March 31st, and those hearings will give people an opportunity to speak out. People are allowed to listen in if they want to hear what the public is saying. But we have a lot of information available. You can also email us at info@danscammerenergy.com, and we can respond to any questions that you may have or concerns about the project that's coming. So we try to make ourselves as available and put as much information out there as possible, but it is a very technical issue, and so it's easy to get skewered, and a lot of misinformation and the game of telephone sort of changes the narrative.
And what's the login on that website?
It's danscammerenergy.com.
Mm-hmm. And those public hearings you talked about, do you have some general information about them? Dates, you talked about the date, locations?
Sure. It's March 31st at 1 p.m. and at 6 p.m. And all of the information for how to register if you'd like to speak or how you can dial in and listen in by phone is all available on our website.
So you don't even have to show up. You can just go online and take part.
With COVID, they're trying to deter people from doing things publicly right now. Normally, right, in a typical situation, pre-COVID, this would be at a local venue in the Hudson Valley, and people would come and speak one by one at a microphone. That's not how they're doing it now. Everything will be via a WebEx or a Zoom type situation, and people will get their 3 minutes to speak at the proverbial microphone, and then it moves on to the next person.
So nothing locally in person yet, socially distanced, of course, but hopefully we can do that sometime soon.
That's right. And our project, after this set of public hearings, the siting board will be reviewing us for up to a year. So by March, this time next year, we should have an answer as to whether or not the state thinks that we have good facts and the project can proceed.
So if this does go forward, and of course, everybody hopes it does, what's the proposed timeline maybe for getting this completed? And then walk us through that whole timeline process, if you would.
Sure. So this is up to now, we've been in what's called the application process. A lot of back and forth with the various state agencies, the Department of Health, Department of Environmental Conservation, the Public Service Commission, which oversees the utilities for the state. And back and forth on submitting information. And they come back and say, we want a little bit more on this. We want a little bit more on that. It's sort of a purgatory because there's no concrete timeline. The benefit of us getting our completeness determination on February 26th was that now we have a more concrete timeline. We have the public hearings. We'll have to have our experts testify publicly. We'll be cross-examined by some of the opposition groups that are opposed to what we're saying. They may decide to litigate some of the issues that we're putting forth, some of our opposition groups and what they call our interveners in the process. And then by March of next year, we should have a definitive answer. So the good news is that now we're in that concrete timeline where we're not in that purgatory anymore. It's much more known what's coming. The downside is that this is the uphill part, right? This is where all the work comes in and that the state requires a lot more of us in terms of our responsiveness.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've closely tracked wind farms off Montauk since this idea first came about. And I'm going to preface this by saying I have a 40-year history on Long Island, as I do in the Hudson Valley, and especially all the way out through the Hamptons. So I've joked around since the early 1980s with people by saying, Montauk, next stop, Lisbon or London. We have this proposal to build wind farms off Montauk, 23 miles out to sea. Those who are behind this say, don't worry, Indian Point goes down. We have your energy, your power for you, to which I tell supporters of that total line of thought that say, we don't need Indian Point. We don't need any kind of energy generation except wind farms off Montauk. I tell them, let's see, you're in Mayapack on a 98 degree day and you go to turn on your air conditioner and it doesn't work. And I tell them, I hope you get a nice breeze blowing outside your window or maybe go to your back porch. Otherwise, I think we need something to help replace Indian Point. And those wind farms off Montauk may be a great idea, but it's not going to really do the trick all the way. At least, and I'm not an expert in this area, you are. From what I can tell, it's not really going to do the trick. It might help, but we need something around Indian Point.
It will certainly help, but all wind and solar has something called a capacity factor. And capacity factor means how often it actually works. Offshore wind that is 23 miles out will work better than something that's inland because there's much more breeze out there. But the problem with wind is that it's got about a 30 to 40% capacity factor. So that means that you're going to build something and spend lots of money on it. You have to build the transmission lines to get to the mainland. And it will work about 40% of the time. And it's 40%. Pretty darn expensive. Yeah, 40% of the time.
What good is that at that point?
Well, you know, you're getting power 40% of the time. But the problem with that is, what do you do the rest of the time? What do you do the other 60% of the time? The
wind's I'm not a math major either, but 60-40 against me doesn't work too well.
Right. I'm not a betting woman, but if I were, I would think that I would want something else to diversify the portfolio, right?
Yeah. 80 would certainly work, I think. Twice as good as 40%. But when we're talking 40 out of 100, that's not a good deal for anybody.
I mean, when you're without power, that 20% of the time seems like a really long time too, even if you were at 80%. The other thing people don't realize is that there is an optimal level of wind that works for wind turbines. So if there's not enough wind, they don't work. But if there's too much wind, they can't harness the power either. So it has to be in a specific range to actually be able to harness the wind and turn it into energy. So there are plenty of days that are too windy out there and they have to shut the wind turbines down too. So that's why your capacity factor for wind is 40% or less.
Mm-hmm. Also the distance when you think about where Montauk is and 23 miles out to sea, am I going to get my power in Orange County at that point if need be?
That's what the transmission lines are for. But again, that adds time. It adds a significant expense to build those transmission lines. And the problem with the time factor is you're looking at 2030, even 2035 to get those facilities up and running. And then they only work 40% of the time when they are up and running. So they're, while it's a step in the right direction, it's not the be all end all that some of the opponents to our project try to make it out to be.
I thought those who propose wind farms off places like Montauk were against energy lines being inserted into the ground in order to get that energy out there, that it might just blow, and I hate to use this term again, like osmosis, just cover the area. So they want to have the wind farms, but then they want the energy transmission lines too. It sounds like, in a way, defeating the original purpose of the wind farms.
There are quite a few groups in that area that are fighting those transmission lines coming up through their beaches. I don't want to speak for them, but it seems on the surface like it's more of a not in my backyard argument. They don't want their beaches dug up, which is completely understandable. But I think what people need to understand is that any new project that's going to create a new disruption that is misunderstood is going to have some opposition to it, whether it be wind, whether it be a natural gas power plant. So a lot of it's not in my backyard. A lot of it's just a lack of understanding of energy in general. But yes, to answer your original question, there is quite a bit of opposition to the transmission lines from that Montauk site.
And I'll wrap up by saying you talk about these wind farms likely will not work 60% of the time. I get itchy if my power is not generating 6 seconds of the time. For 6 seconds, if my power is not generating, I got a problem with that. I hit
think
the fan.
Most of us do. Most of us do, right? I mean, if we have so many, we rely on electronics. And I think we've realized during COVID just how much we rely on our electronics to get through the day, whether it be your laptop or your children are virtual for school, your telephone, because it's the way you communicate with the outside world now since you can't go anywhere. And then, of course, in these cold snaps that we've had here in January, where it's dipped below zero, you need your power. And we've seen what's happened in Texas. And not to be alarmist myself, because I try not to do it, but people die. People die mm-hmm. when they don't have a power, the correct power, and it either gets too hot or too cold.
Right. No doubt about that. As we saw, like you said, down in Texas, and as we've seen in other places too, this is a topic that will continue to generate as time goes on. Michelle Hook, Vice President of Public Affairs, Dance Camera Energy over in Orange County's Newburgh and along the shores of the Hudson River, the Dance Camera Energy Generating Station has been there for a long time. Michelle Hook, we thank you for joining us here today on Orange County Talk Radio. Hope we get to talk again. Thank you. Very informative.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Michelle. Here on Orange County Talk Radio, produced by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, the Indian Point Energy Center, supporting our communities right through April of this year, 2021. Catch all of our Westchester, Fairfield, and Lower Hudson Valley Shark Creative Network programming, including Orange County Talk Radio plus Putnam, Dutchess, and Rockland County Talk Radio on our YouTube channel, Shark Creative YouTube.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.